Hey, everybody, if you ever are at a railway crossing and those signals are flashing and you don't see the train and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I'm running a little bit late, got to get to work. The boss man's going to get on my old, you know, he's going to get mad at me. He's going to get on my case. Maybe I'll go through the crossing. Bad idea. You know why? Think about this. In 2018 alone, 270 people were killed at railroad crossings. 270. Stop. Trains can't.
The Around the NFL podcast has never rubbed another man's rhubarb.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
Not that there's anything wrong with rubbing rhubarb.
Please, no more rhubarb. I'm begging you. I don't like to mute anything on Twitter, but
we're getting close.
If rhubarb continues to show up in my mentions, and I love our overseas listeners, and you know they like to teach us about their culture, I don't have the interest in rhubarb. It's not a thing for me.
Hmm.
It's like we were talking before the show, Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Early 90s alternative rock came up. We were talking about Soul Asylum and the song Runaway Train and whether it's good or if it holds up and all that. Ricky, you just don't want to hear it, right? It's not like, it's no offense. It's just like you don't want to hear us talking about that.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, around
that's how I feel about rhubarb.
Around the same time that Runaway Train was such a hit, I was, you know, in a band called Delaware, which we've brought up on the show.
Of course.
Which was on the label Strawberry Rhubarb. Strawberry Rhubarb Records.
See how it all ties together.
Some other
there?
Bands involved.
How many bands were on this label? This is another link in the investigation.
We had a zine. So. We had a zine, Strawberry Rhubarb. So it was just, there were
projects. There have been multiple side discussions saying that all the tapes and all the footage exist. You just won't bring it to us.
Is it? Yeah. Do you have the tapes? Yes or no, Greg?
I have one tape.
So it's the investigation. It doesn't even exist at this point. It's on you to bring it in.
Just think how happy you'll make people. Like, what does that mean to you to make people happy?
Not enough, apparently.
Wow. What if we put it? What? All right. This is a serious question, because the internet's pretty amazing with crowdsourcing and funding. As we've seen, we got one of our old producers a brand new car, I think, or paid for repairs. Wes, of course, during his courageous cancer fight, the listeners pitched in and helped Wes out with the bills. What would be the number, Greg, that fans would have to raise, and I'm not joking, to get the Delaware tapes on our podcast?
I can't put a price on it. I'm not putting a price on it.
$1,000?
No. I can hear the HR lemmings coming in, you know, they're coming
in. Don't blame it on that. They don't listen. Nobody listens.
They're not going to interfere here.
I don't want it. Wish I didn't bring it up.
$2,000?
No.
$2,000.
I wouldn't do it for money. That's the wrong.
If you did, would you credit? Would you give some of the earnings to the other people that you'd be exposing? The other bandmates.
That's true.
Smart.
The writers.
Fair.
The right. Label.
I was pretty low on the
strawberry rhubarb.
Strawberry rhubarb.
They
label.
Need a taste.
Let's just say that Greg's not the only one from his band who has tape of Delaware.
We don't want to go that route.
Well,
we would rather not, because that seems unfair to Greg.
Mm.
But, Mark, welcome back from vacation.
Thanks.
You did one of your patented Sessler staycations, which I always imagine is just you walking through Los Angeles alleyways in broad daylight. That's just how I just picture every vacation for you.
I kind of learned a lesson because this vacation began on the Saturday after we wrapped up the draft. You don't start. You start the vacation where you wrap up. You kind of, that Friday beforehand needs to be where the vacation starts. It was like an emergency vacation to get a breath of fresh air, and I stripped it of two functional days, so there was less wandering. There was very little wandering.
So the whole time you just regretted that you missed
the whole
that
time,
on one day?
No, even from like,
I've thought about
even
that though,
from like Sunday, I was like, I planned this very poorly. I
no,
should have taken the
weekend.
Following week where if we wrap up a pod on Thursday or something.
But sometimes, you like know. You said, you just need the breath of fresh air. I think about
right.
that sometimes because I always take the week after the Super Bowl off and we don't get back till Monday afternoon. And so you're running into the same thing. But sometimes it's just the right time. You just feel like that's a nice
Your
time.
Super Bowl, post-Super Bowl vacation is what compelled me to do it. And there is a plus side, but there was a lingering minus side in my head also.
Always fun to take a walk up there on the old Cecil Crane. Coming up on today's show, off-season storylines to watch through the rest of this spring. Is it spring yet?
Yes.
Yeah, it's spring. It's May. Come on, Dan. I thought it was April still, and then sometimes it's like, when does it fall? But we're certainly in the spring now and through the summer. So we'll track or kind of each share some storylines, not like season preview type storylines, more just things to keep an eye on as we, you know, rookie mini camps, OTAs, the mandatory mini camps, and then, of course, into standard training camp. What are some storylines to watch? But before that.
By the way, this is why October beats May.
Let's talk about it.
Well, people are always talking about the best month, and May is always a popular choice.
Yeah.
But for a great portion of the country, May is a cruel tease. Comes in and you think it's going to be beautiful, and it's, you know, if you're in Chicago, I was there for draft weekend once, and it was 30-something degrees and windy. Come
on. Up and down.
Come on, October is just beautiful just about everywhere in America.
That was the Eddie White interview, if I'm not mistaken, that you conducted during that draft.
Kevin White.
Kevin White, excuse me. Maybe also
Kevin
Eddie White.
Yeah, I was.
You were all in on Kevin White for like years after that interview.
Yes, I was beguiled by Kevin White.
Eddie White.
Who knows? Like he's with the Cardinals.
There's got to be 150 Eddie Whites
it's
in
like
our
a
life.
Leave It to Beaver character. I think.
Probably.
No, it's Eddie Haskell, actually. All right, let's do some news.
Okay, I'm waiting for this little Starbucks cup.
That's the kind of man.
Tormin's talking. Thomas talking. Hand to the right. Come on. Yeah. Look at the cop!
All right, Wes. This is, you are our representative, our Game of Thrones fan in the room here. You speak to it. Speak to the shame of a Starbucks cup showing up in a scene of Game of Thrones, one of the, you know, the hottest pop culture property on television, the whole world watching, except for the rest of us in the room. And explain, you know, talk your way out of this one, Wes.
Well, I was told after our spoilers discussion that I am incredibly old, much older than you would think chronologically, and that I am totally removed from the cultural zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
This is an example. You have a television show with dragons.
Yes.
You have a television show with people sleeping with family members, and they supposedly, allegedly have holy blood running through their bodies
mm-hmm.
that allows them. And the most
sounds like a terrible show.
The point at which their loyal viewers get upset is when they have a Starbucks cup, because now it's not believable anymore. You got dragons on your show. What do you mean it's not believable?
That's a fair point.
That point, and I saw that point, and I get that one. What is the word? Anachronistic? What is it?
It's an anachronism.
Yeah, well, that you got to get that right. You got to get those details right. You can't have a coffee chain from Seattle from the 20th century founding.
I had that job once, a continuity person on a
really?
Film set. Actually, my title, because this was when they did not correctly realize that anyone could do the job, my title was script girl.
No. You had
but your job was to like to line up every single
wait,
shot
not,
to make
not
sure
script boy.
But well, I mean just, that the title did not exist.
The title came from a time when there was like two jobs on
right.
on a 60-person set, and one of them was, for women, and one was called script
right.
girl.
But yeah, I jumped into this with no experience. But it was that kind of thing where it was like if a pebble was out of place or someone had their tongue out, then they
right.
didn't. You had to like control 80 wild people, and it was like
tongues.
An absolute nightmare.
Let me say this a little more forcefully.
Mm-hmm.
On the episode after the episode in which the opposition had a practically 1,000-to-1 advantage in manpower.
Right.
Especially because they were undead and
right.
they came back immediately from being dead. The next show is when the Starbucks Cup happens, and that's when everybody gets in a rough
wait,
uproar.
Do you enjoy okay. this show?
I do. I just like there are certain parts of it that you really have to try hard to suspend your disbelief,
mm.
especially if you're not used to watching undead and dragons.
Mm.
So, like, the Starbucks Cup really, to me, is a little La Reveille Magnifico.
They've done a deep dive. Not
on the level of nerds watching this show.
But a coffee cup?
A coffee cup. Local. They do support the locals.
All right. Let's get into the news. Good pop culture talk. Sebastian Janikowski. Let's talk about some retirements. And we did last week. And if you missed it, go back and listen because it holds up beautifully. Mark, Patrick Claibon, if this is okay. Claibon and Colleen were sitting in your chair for our Around the AFC and Around the NFC in 48-minute episodes. And check it out. But what it caused us to do is not hit any news. So we missed little nugs, like some retirements, like Sebastian Janikowski. Is that okay that they sat in your chair?
I mean, I would normally feel like a huge disturbance in the air if someone were outshining me in right. that position. I didn't feel anything, but I think I just was generally unplugged. But I did see that they both performed. People loved them. So what can I right. tell you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, but you were okay with them actually using your chair.
I mean, this is, yes. Okay. This chair is used by Damashek's people too, so.
Okay, here we go. Seabass is done after 19 seasons in the NFL. The former Raiders and Seahawks kicker calling it quits. Oh, yes, this is, I asked for retirement music. This works. So he goes off into retirement after 19 years. Almost 19 years to the day when he was drafted in the first round of the 2000 NFL draft. It was a good run. The 41-year-old told ESPN, I still think of the Super Bowl. It still hurts. Mm. God, who even remembers that Super Bowl so long ago? But the Raiders, a long, long time ago in the 2002 season, I believe, or went to the Super Bowl and got creamed by John Gruden and the Bucks in a game that famously the Bucks with Gruden knew all of the Raiders' play calls, as history has it, and the MVP of the season, Rich Gannon, had a miserable day, in part because the head coach of the Raiders, who was
Bill Callahan
and staff, didn't quite prep for the fact that Gruden had built that team that he was facing at the Super Bowl. That's a little aside, a little NFL history jaunt. But coming back to Seabass, it's over, Wes. First round kicker, will that ever happen again? Hasn't happened since.
I predict it will happen at some point.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we're just a couple of years away from having a second-round kicker. And that guy wasn't even as great of a prospect as Seabass was coming out of Florida
And that
State.
Was as public and a big a disgrace/disaster as you can imagine. I feel like that would scare people away from ever touching even the second round.
But I feel like that the level of prospect that Roberto Aguayo was, there's going to be somebody who's like twice as good of a prospect, say some left-footer who kicks him from 70 pretty regularly. Like, I think that might happen in the future. I also want to say Seabass has gotten a lot of love on this show and from people on Twitter for the last few years. Not even the best left-footed kicker of his era. David Akers deserved a lot more love than Seabass.
I guess Seabass was kind of he had some off-the-field issues earlier in his career, but in terms of an entertaining on-field character, he had the big beer belly, he was huge, he was on the Raiders, he had the biggest leg.
The nickname.
He hit a 63-yarder, of course, which at the time had tied an NFL record. He was Seabass. You had all that as part of the package.
Well, I think also the throwback angle. I think people actually pictured him in their mind smoking cigarettes on the sidelines before he was about to go kick.
I think it's also his body type. He was just this massive dude. To get picked in the first round as a kicker, it seems like you'd have to have someone like Al Davis on the other end pulling the trigger, because you're going to get absolutely assassinated.
People
as a front
him.
Office.
But he ended up, he has the most 50-plus yard kicks of all time. So you think of him as a big kick. Ultimately, you look at the rest of that first round. Of course, he was the last guy left in that draft other than Tom Brady. It's like he was one of the 10 best players in that first round for sure. So
right,
it's like, I get like position, and you shouldn't draft a kicker in the first round, but people get so caught up like mocking the Lions because they took a tight end eighth. It's like the position scarcity, and in the end, he was a better pick than a ton of other picks in that first round.
If you knew your kicker was going to play at a high level for 16 years, would you take him in the first round and just sit back and be like, I know it's going to go well.
He had some bad years. That rookie
year, for
instance,
was
a
nightmare. I still probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, I would not take a kicker in the first
round. Also ending his career is Jamal Charles. Charles signed a one-day contract with the Chiefs and retired, the team announced last Wednesday. 32 years old, entered the league in 2008 out of Texas. And from 2008 to 2016 was just an absolute stud, one of the best players in football. He's the Chiefs' all-time leading rusher, over 7,000 yards, 5 1,000-yard season. I believe he tore his ACL week one of, was it 2016?
Yes.
It was in the end. He never was the same guy after that. He bounced around a little bit in the end. So it was sad that things ended up the way they did, because he, Mark, was on a Hall of Fame trajectory before that ACL tear.
Yeah, I think now that you'd have to look at him just from the way the Hall of Fame works with numbers. You still have Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson about to end their careers soon. To me, he's 56 in rushing. I think he has a hard time making the Hall of Fame based on the fact that
I don't think he will make the Hall of Fame.
No, I mean, he's closer.
Ring of Honor? Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know what Ring of Honor means anymore, because it feels like every time I turn around, someone's being thrown into a Ring of Honor.
He certainly would deserve to with Kansas City.
Right.
Is that a shot at Jake DeLome just now?
No, I mean, but just in general, it seems like if you played on the same team for 6+ years, you're tossed into the Ring of Honor.
Well, because he didn't have that many carries after that injury, he is the all-time leader of tailbacks, really running backs, in yards per carry, which is an amazing stat that he's going to go down. There are a few quarterbacks ahead of him, Cunningham and Vic, and Marion Motley is ahead of him, and he was technically a fullback. So I don't know if you give it to Jamaal Charles or not, but that's still pretty incredible that year after year after year, he was 5.3, 6.4, 6.9. I mean, he kind of turned you hear track guy. He was a track guy, and he's one of he changed track guy from being a dirty word. He made it work.
Speaking of Chiefs Ring of Honor, Derek Johnson also is signing a one-day contract this week and will retire. 36 years old, entered the league in 2005 as a first-round pick and played a long career in Kansas City, finishes as the Chiefs' all-time leader in tackles, added 14 interceptions, 27.5 sacks, first team All-Pro selection in 2010, and a four-time Pro Bowler. A nice career.
I think he was one of the first of those guys who ruptured their Achilles but then came back to play anyway. Halfway through his career is about when the Achilles technology got a lot better in the medical world. But that 2008 draft class for running backs, it's interesting to see Chris Johnson recently officially retired, Jamaal Charles, Matt Forte retired last year, Jonathan Stewart retired this year, McFadden retired last year, all from that same draft class.
Good class. I saw McFadden last week getting out of a Jaguar in Larchmont Village. How about that?
Better career. Jamaal
and I thought Charles. Of texting Wes at the time just because he loved Darren McFadden so
Let's
much. But it
calm
was
down.
It was just like, what's really the payoff with this text?
I saw Darren McFadden at the first Veterans Combine. Remember the short-run Veterans Combine? And he basically went through the whole rigmarole, and he basically asked the reporter, what was my 40 time? And they told him to go, I'm not going to make any team. And he just walked away.
Wow. Can we press pause and go back to Greg? Do you put that much thought into a text to a friend?
I mean, this was
usually with me. I'll just if something comes to my mind, I'll just fire it off, and it doesn't even need to reply. So you actually processed whether it would be worth it for Wes to look at it. Maybe that's a nice thing to do.
No, I mean, it was like a 2-second thought, and you're walking down, and I think I was about to cross the street too. So you don't want to be crossing and texting. It's just at the moment passed.
Would you have liked to get that text, Wes?
I would put it this way. If I truly was a big Darren McFadden fan, it would be a nice text to receive.
Right. Ultimately, it's it would be sort of needling, Wes, of a decades-old thing of, you love Darren McFadden.
The assessment that I like Darren McFadden just because I have claimed on separate times that he's not a joke of a football player. I mean, let's...
No one.
You did like him during his Cowboys run, as I recall.
I defended him from people who thought he was washed up when he could clearly still play.
All right, let's move on. Happy trails to all those players. Let's check with the Raiders. A few things to go through here. First, Richie Incognito. Remember him? Somebody on Twitter called this potential for Headlock West. The guard, controversial guard, spent 2018 out of football. He said multiple off-field altercations. There's a mental health facility stay. Something happened in a funeral home, which, always a red flag when crazy stuff goes on in the funeral home. Anyway, Mike Garofolo, reported that Incognito is in shape, feeling well in all aspects, and the Raiders are going to work out Incognito. The Raiders obviously need help and the left guard position, Greg. I mean, is this going to happen? With the Raiders, nothing. You never know.
I mean, at this point, I would assume it is happening. It just seems so Raiders-y. And it's funny because John Gruden, earlier this week, just was clearly annoyed and was saying that left guard spot is wide open. No one really stepped up. He's already getting annoyed that no one stepped up for the left guard spot. It's May 3rd, and you can almost imagine him walking into Mayock's office or Mark Davis or however it works, and be like, all right, enough of this waiting around with Incognito. Let's just do it.
Why are you drafting a guy at number 4 because of character?
Right.
And yet you trade for Antonio Brown, sign Vontaze Burfict, and work out Richie Incognito. Why is character so important to you just for your draft picks but not your other?
Got to balance it out.
I guess.
I mean,
you're
they talk about
bad
those.
Guy, got to have a super good guy.
Well, they're not admitting to the bad guy side of it, but they talk about the rookies as like their core future building, but apparently you're allowed to lace that core with some bad apples.
Poison.
So, yeah, I mean,
straight up human poison.
Well, it might be like there's different people in charge of different things. You know, Mayock, it's his draft, but I don't know. Is he the one signing Richie Incognito? Who knows?
Isaiah Crowell spent last year with the Jets, had his moments, signed with the Raiders, was going to be in the mix. Well, not anymore. Last week he suffered a torn Achilles, and the Raiders place him on injured reserve. Because of that, a couple of dominoes fell. Marshawn Lynch popped up and said, hey, I'll come back if you want me back. You know, beast mode. And, I have to say, I would not have a problem with that, but we are not doing a third beast mode retrospective on this podcast.
I'm with you.
Did we do one a few weeks ago?
We did one on the Twitter show. We did one at the Super Bowl. Well, actually, we've done three already.
In this case, it sounds like it wasn't his fault. It was reported that he was not in the plans and that he's headed to retirement. But it sounds like he didn't know that. You know, he sounds
I'm
like he fully wants to play. His mom, you know, immediately when that report came up was like, what? He wants to play. But it sounds like he's done.
This man retired before I had cancer. What are we doing?
The Raiders, for what it's worth, did act and replace Correll on the roster with Doug Martin. They re-signed Martin, who ran for over 700 yards and ran for over 4 yards a carry over 16 games, including 9 starts with Oakland last year. They looked ready to move on from Martin and, of course, signed first-round rookie Josh Jacobs. Already have DeAndre Washington, Chris Warren. But now they need some depth, so Martin rejoins the fray. Maybe this actually – Doug Martin's just taking a job because you got to get a job. You'd be better off hanging out on the wire a little bit longer, but I guess you can't turn down work.
They have a lot of people. This is the team that cut C.J. Anderson after less than a week last year before he went on to do what he did with the Rams. And it was Gruden who was talking endlessly about Chris Warren – at the combine as if maybe Chris Warren was going to be promoted and take over some sort of spot. Then they draft Josh Jacobs and sign Doug Martin. So, full house.
Finally, Ronald Ollie, who was featured on Last Chance U, that Netflix show that, Greg, I know you're quite a big fan of. He has signed or earned a tryout with the Oakland Raiders.
He signed
with the Raiders.
Tryout worked.
So he got a chance to try out with the team. Greg, I know you are excited to talk about this.
Ronald Ollie is maybe my favorite character. I've watched season 1 and 3, and I didn't watch it until fairly recently. It's an amazing show, and he's an amazing character in the show and just person. He's like a very likable guy. He lost his parents. His dad killed his mom and then killed himself when Ronald Ollie was 5 years old. Mm. And the life trials that so many of the guys on the show have to go through to get to the point, which is just the longest of long shots, is fascinating to watch. And if you guys do watch the first season ever, like, his personality and just everything about him is really unique. And it's really cool because he was going into the draft process, he was a huge long shot. He's at Nicholls State. So it's cool to see. Maybe he'll make it.
Very cool. So you would heartily endorse that program?
I would.
It's a bit extra to watch season one, blank on season two, and then watch season three.
Well, it's a lot of – they're long, and I heard that this – and maybe fans of the show could tell me I'm wrong – that they were a little aware of the cameras going into season two because they did 2 seasons at one college, and then they went to a new one for the third season. And so I just got some bad feedback on it. And plus, it's like 6 hours to
– It's kind of like
– It's a logical answer.
Bit of the Wire corollary there. Fans of that show, and people are always very late to The Wire, the HBO show, and said, should I watch it? And people would say, absolutely, watch season one. You could skip season two, because that's when they went to the docks. And the dock season was a little weird and not necessarily part of the same adventure or story. And then season three, they get back on track. That's the connection I'm seeing here.
Adventure.
There is a connection, but I think time has – first of all, you do miss out on things.
That was a Keith Hansis line. He's like, good adventure, this episode.
I think time has proven season two underrated. of the wire.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm with Dan on this one. Enough of going to the docks with that jerk-off son every day.
Let's move on to the Bears. I invented that. The Bears are looking for a replacement for Cody Parkey, who, of course, infamously in Chicago, he'll go down in Chicago lore as Mr. Double Doink. In the playoffs, cost them
Mr. a game Today Show.
Against the Eagles, then went on the Today Show, and then got cut. Anyway, so on Friday at three-day rookie minicamp, Matt Nagy had the, you know, on the surface, a good idea, but I'm not sure what the payoff was either way, but he decided to take all eight kickers at the rookie minicamp and set them up on a 43-yard field goal in front of the entire rookie minicamp roster at the end of practice. And said, do what the old kicker couldn't. Maybe it was going to rub a little salt in Parkey's wounds if they hit all eight, and then that news item goes out there. But instead, the kickers miss 6 of 8. Nagy says that's not good enough. Now, I will say this. We always look at the end result of what happens, which is 100% what matters, right? But as we're learning, 2 of those 8 holds and snaps, it wasn't 100%. All right, I'll leave it at that. So that blew up in Nagy's face a little bit.
Bill Parcells, Adam Vinatieri talks about at the beginning of his career, Vinatieri would be setting up for a kick in practice and Parcells would walk across his spot and do a whammy before he kicked, because if you can't handle the pressure in a practice, like, mm-hmm. when are you going to do it in the game?
The kick was also, you know, slightly blocked, so was that part of the
It
drill?
Was tipped. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he said he was like trying to, like, you know, some teams are like, we're moving on from the past. He was like, I wanted to talk about the elephant in the room.
That's Dan like Quinn's move.
All right. Please. We got something else going on here.
What?
The Bears have acquired Eddie Pinheiro from the Raiders. We've got a trade, breaking news. It's a kicker trade, and it's involving the Chicago Bears. Whoa. They didn't like what they saw at the tryout. They're giving up a conditional 7th-round pick to the Raiders. He has to be on the roster 5 games.
Cousin Eddie, welcome to town.
Pinheiro won that job for the Raiders last year coming out of camp. He beat out Giorgio Tavecchio, and he beat out Nuge. And then he tore his groin, like, right before
the
season started.
Are they still going to keep 8 kickers, or are they?
Well, there's only 2 other kickers under contract, okay. And one of them is a guy named Chris Blewett. I just don't think Chris Blewett should be on the Bears roster. No offense. It just seems like you're inviting something.
You need to change that name if you're going to be a kicker.
That is in the poorly matched last name Hall of Fame, along with former Tampa Bay Rays reliever Grant Balfour.
Bob Walk.
It would be funny if, like, all Bears
blew it. No, man.
Grant Balfour.
Just become Chris with no last name. That would become a media thing in a good way.
What if the Bears...
Or a symbol? Like a Prince symbol?
If, like, Matt Nagy becomes upset, like, all their moves are regarding kickers. Like, all the news coming out of the Bears is kicker-related. Mm.
Yeah.
Because so far, that's kind of the trend right now.
Yeah. I don't know why Nagy did that, by the way. That was weird. Let's move on.
Like, it's like they ask him questions about other positions and he just keeps talking about.
Remember what happened in the playoffs? Gerald McCoy, let's talk about him. The Bucs defensive tackle, clearly on the trade block, has not gotten any vote of confidence from Bruce Arians. He stayed away from offseason workouts. But the 6-time Pro Bowler, 9 years into a career, he's heard enough of the negative comments around him. He used Sunday to speak out during a workout via an Instagram story. That's how things operate in 2019, guys, to prove his dedication to his craft. Cinco de Mayo, everybody out, probably getting ready to drink, probably drinking right now. No matter. You want to question me? See what I do on Cinco de Mayo. I work. And I've got my kids with me. How many people doing that? All pro, on and off the field. Want to question me? Is he going to be ready? Does he love football? What? Y'all crazy. Lost y'all mind. I work. Don't you ever question me.
That's a great rant.
I mean, that was just like one little segment of it. When they show it on NFL Network, because they're showing the Instagram story, you can see it was one of like 13 straight Instagram stories, which is also like, Erica, you do that sometimes, like where it's just, it's a nonstop video that you're cutting up by 15 seconds, you know, but it's like a 3-minute, essentially a 3-minute video. Isn't that kind of cheating? Isn't that kind of annoying?
I think it could be annoying. I've never done a 3-minute.
Maybe not
video.
3 minutes, but it was
like two videos.
It was like 12. It was like 12. But I mean, I'm saying you open up a story
out of
and you see
hit with shrapnel.
You're
on that
seeing. Yeah. Okay, you're seeing.
I mean, Instagram cuts it up nicely for you.
Sure. I'm saying if you open up the McCoy one and the rant starts, you see that there's 14 more stories to go in that 24 hours.
Oh, but
isn't that
with
too many?
Him, yeah, you don't need
too many.
Yeah, it's stupid. That's stupid.
It's intimidating.
But
you're just like, if you see all that, you're just going to turn it off.
Moving on. Myles Garrett, the star defensive end for the Cleveland Browns, did a feature with Dan Pompey for Bleacher Report, and he said that his former defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, now the defensive coordinator of the Jets, he had a negative effect on him because he wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do on the field. Here's the quote from Garrett to Pompey. I hopefully have more freedom to be the player I want to be. Greg was more like, you win with these two moves. I don't want to see anything else out of you. It's kind of hard with two moves. I feel like you can't always be so predictable. For the record, Garrett had 13.5 sacks last year and went to the Pro Bowl. So I guess he'll have 23.5 sacks this year. Be all pro.
So you're saying that Greg Williams thought he knew what was better than someone who's one of the best in the world at doing something? Like, that doesn't surprise me at all. Please. The ego on this guy.
I mean, that's one
way
to look at it.
I'm usually pro Greg Williams, but it's like maybe you should listen to the person that's like a genius, essentially, at that skill set.
Why are you usually pro Greg Williams?
I mean, I'm in this room. I'm just saying, like, I don't think, like, he's not the worst coach in the world.
I normally like to say I'd like to hear the other person's side of it, but I don't know if I need to hear Greg Williams'
well,
side of it.
Well, there's the other side of it, too, is like, I don't, like, Myles Garrett. So the defensive coach said that you can only use two moves. So there were games where you thought you could have more sacks, but you said, no, coach said I can only use these two moves. I'm calling BS on this. I hope this isn't true. Like, he would only do two moves because coach said he couldn't do other moves? This just seems unnecessary, to be honest with you.
Adam Gase is going to be using more than two moves on Greg Williams by November.
Headlock gate. But I looked into this. There's history between these two guys. Myles Garrett went after the Browns' game plan after a loss to the Steelers last year, and Greg Williams fired back via the press. They had heard me say that over 100 times here. You can't take responsibility, just blame me. I'm okay with it, which is pretty passive-aggressive. Dig back at his star player. Just leave it in the past.
I mean, I think our Greg's point with Greg Williams has often been that he has a shelf life, and that is true in Cleveland, and it will be true with the Jets.
It's hard to imagine a person with a poet's soul not getting along great with Greg Williams.
And my point, you might not like this one, Mark. A lot of guys like to talk on the Browns. Myles Garrett does.
I know. I noticed
does.
That you had that the Browns.
Myles Garrett doesn't at all.
Myles Garrett does not. Outside of this, that's why it surprised me, because he has said nothing almost negative at all in his career.
All I'm saying is, since we're talking about this, he publicly called out his coach's game plan in a game last year, and then in minicamp went out of his way to take a shot at. He'll talk to the media about things he's unhappy with, and there are multiple players on the Browns that will talk, and if this thing goes sideways, there are some guys that talk. That's all I'm saying.
One thing is, they were destroyed by everyone for legitimately sucking and not getting out of their own way. They look like they've set the table nicely, and if they suck again after all this hoopla, they are going to be denigrated and scattered by people if they go 5-11. People are not going to end with their fun. And I can see it is a concern, but at the same time, they have a quarterback, which they've
never had
before.
What did you say? You saw something on Twitter?
No, I noticed that you had like a post was it a mailbag? I think about the Browns being the offseason story. It's a very fair point that they have been doused with all this praise. They've done nothing.
On the mailbag, someone asked me if
the mailbag
people were getting too excited about the Browns. And for the record, Mark, I completely said, yes, keep that in mind. But this team is so talented that I believe this is a, you know, playoff team.
I think you know that I side with the idea of chill out until you have won games. Like, right. I'm not walking around, like, spinning scarves and throwing hats and, like, kicking people
like
in the face.
That.
Spinning scarves.
Whatever, just brown scarves, you know.
Finally in the news, the Bills, they're trying to curtail tailgate antics with new policy. That's the headline on NFL.com. I put my own headline in our rundown for the show today. Bills attempting to price out louts and loose women at tailgate. Now, how are they going to do it? The team is creating a, quote, tailgate village, which will charge a 20-person vehicle $300, a 40-person vehicle $500, and $900 for a 60-people vehicle. The charge breaks down to about $15 per person for fans that want to tailgate in the designated area. Buses or limos with passengers who do not want to tailgate will be charged $100 to park. So basically, they're trying to get rid of people that are showing at the game. You know, they're just, oh, we're not going to the game. We're not here for anything else but to get smashed, get destroyed, go viral. And if they raise the prices, they will send these degenerates somewhere else on their Sunday morning. That's the goal. Now, whether or not it works, we'll find out.
The riffraff usually has a penchant for sticking around.
Money, the pricing out riffraff, I think works sometimes, and that's what they're going for. Just make it too expensive for them.
How are they pre-identifying loose women in louts before they enter the stadium?
Once they're in, they lose them. They lose coverage of them.
Feel like that's a large chunk of their stadium crowd, so they should be somewhat careful with this. But
It's also only $15 per person to get in. I don't know though. This is one of the parts of the Bills, you know, experience from afar that I have enjoyed.
They hate it. The Bills organization. And there's quotes in the story if you want to read Kevin Patrick's post. And we've heard it, even in a joking way, when we were at the owners' meetings, I brought it up to Sean McDermott, and you could tell, not that it struck a chord with him, but it was the idea of, no, they don't like this idea. We're known. One of the things the Bills as a team are most famous for in the last 10 years is their unruly fans. Not the football product, not their success or failures. What's going on in the parking lot? They don't like that. We do, as fans.
Right.
But if I was a...
I mean, it's better than everyone Bills talking fan, about, right? Like the Buddy Nicks, you know, era. Chan Gailey.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Like, hey, you guys, remember Doug Whaley? That was terrible.
Buddy and Chan.
That's what's happening in the news. Hey, guys, wedding time. Chris Wessling. Oh, my God. Holy goodness. It is May 6th as we tape this. You're getting married on May 19th. It is coming. Like a freight train. And guess what?
Freight train I would not go near.
No, especially with the
game. Don't step in front of.
We should get extra for that. Anyway, theblacktux.com, that's where you go to get it. You know, Greg, myself, Mark, all groomsmen in Wes's wedding. What an honor. And we are all using the Black Tux, as is the groom, right?
Mine arrived today.
Unbelievable. We all have our blacktux.com tuxedos. So we are ready to go, and that's a big moment. Mark, I know you said you've slowed down with your Instagram output, but who is going to put the first photo of the four heroes in tuxes together on Instagram? It's something to watch. What's going to happen on the gram?
I mean, it's got to be Wes has his choice of how he wants the media to run that day.
He'll be busy, though.
Yeah.
His hands will be full.
Nobody needs a green light from me to post about my wedding on their various social media outlets.
I give that company some props. When it showed up in my house, the pre-ordered tux, the box itself, you open it up, the whole thing's been kept very nice.
Package.
The whole thing.
What a package. And as convenient as can be. You wear the tux, and then after the wedding, they give you 72-hour grace period. Just put it back in the box and send it to us. We'll take care of everything.
It will not return in its pristine form, I suggest, or predict.
Sweat-soaked.
One less stressful thing.
Like someone from the home office is like marking down Mark's name now. It's like, let's watch out for any drug paraphernalia with this Sessler guy.
I didn't go down that road, Greg.
Rent your suit or tuxedo at theblacktux.com and enjoy $20 off with code ROUND. That's theblacktux.com, code ROUND, for $20 off your purchase. The Black Tux, it's coming, Wes.
What timing? Do they know the wedding's coming? They should just be hammering these ads the next couple weeks.
I agree. All right, now let's get to it. Off-season storylines to watch through the spring and summer. We'll go around the horn here. And you guys throwing out there that I guess what we're looking for here is a storyline that, you know, will shape the season in a lot of ways for that team or the division or the conference. Wes, I'm going to mix it up. I don't usually do this.
Nice.
I'm going to start with you.
Well, our very own Brian Baldinger recently said that Daniel Jones, drafted by the Giants at number 6 overall, is one of the best athletes ever to play the quarterback position in New York.
What?
Ran a 4.640.
Tested very well.
tested very well, drafted 6th overall. I want to see this offseason if there's a La Ravio Magnifico. If this guy is clearly better than Eli Manning in practices, a guy who's been one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL for the last 3 years, if this guy is clearly better than Eli, he should play week one, and Giants fans should be demanding it. If he's not clearly better than one of the guys who's been the worst quarterback in the NFL, one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL, then the Giants are in trouble because they drafted a bust. If this guy's such a good athlete, we should see right away whether he's better than Eli Manning or not. I just will Shurmur and Gettleman make the same mistake Hugh Jackson did last year, ultimately maybe costing his team the playoffs because just out of some beholden to some philosophy that he has to stick with the
veteran. He'd have to be on fire, though, for any chance, you would think, just because picking up the offense and reading defense, and just because, I mean, we've seen Eli Manning's stature in that franchise. Normally, you would say, yeah, the number 6 pick would have a chance, and that would be – it's an interesting topic to even bring up because I haven't even thought of Daniel Jones as a potential week one starter. Normally, you would, but it's because the odds are so stacked against him. He'd have to crush
it. Isn't that a no-lose situation for the Giants, though? If that kid shows up and plays out of his mind and looks incredible and looks like an athletic freak, even if they, out of deference to Eli, sit him, it becomes just a matter of time, and then maybe you have a real solution at the position. The worst-case scenario, of course, if he looks lost.
Right.
You know, and they get off on a bad foot with him through it could have not Hackenberg-level failure potential, but you're nervous. You really do want him to show something. It's important.
It is. It's like they went out of their way to draft someone who is already preordained as a student of the Mannings. So it already puts him in that. If he's the understudy, we kind of get it because he's always been Eli's buddy. But it maybe removes some of the Eli. We have to hold him up on a pedestal because the GM actually went and got a quarterback to compete with Eli versus just answering questions about Eli versus the void.
I'm not going to put it on Daniel Jones, though. If sounds like he did well all offseason, showed some good promise in the preseason, but he has no chance to start week one. Because to me, that's not going to be his fault.
Why are we acting like it's 2002 and not 2019? Quarterbacks drafted in the top 10 are expected to start.
I guess it's because it's the Giants.
Yeah, I think it's because it's the Eli thing with the Giants, which has been one of the weirdest situations going on.
And it is you said it's a no-lose, but it's a continued to lose. You know, they've been a losing team 5 out of 6 seasons.
I think I'm trying to think the last time this happened. I know opinions vary on Eli as a player, but within the New York Giants, he's a franchise legend that has all their statistical records and 2 Super Bowls. When's the last time a player got drafted, a quarterback got drafted with a living icon still as the starting quarterback and immediately took over? I don't think it really happens. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is an example, but he waited 3 years.
Like the Dolphins never went and got that guy when they had a fading Dan Marino? It's a good question. I mean, because even Eli sat behind Kurt Warner.
They usually get rid of the veteran so he's not forced to undergo a process like that.
Usually there's the veteran is in decline. Maybe he gets hurt or gets unseated in the middle of the season. But Eli, of course, with the exception of one game, has played every game for the Giants for 15 years. Yes, very interesting, Wes. We started off with Wes bats leadoff for the Shield, our 3-1 company softball team. And again, showing his ability to get on base and
play
start
ball.
Rallies and score runs and just be a tone setter like a Nick Senzel.
Oh, Nick Senzel. Don't even get me started on Nick Senzel. The whole world is – everything that was dark is light again. Nick Senzel is here to turn the Red season around.
He's a prospect for the Red – or now a
prospect, please. He's the best player on the team already.
All right. Greg, you're up.
I'm going to go with the Josh Gordon situation that I, over the next few months, want to see what the word is from the Ian Rappaports and the Mike Garofolos of what is Josh Gordon's potential status for the 2019 season. Because I think it's been a little overlooked. I just when he was suspended, it was just like, okay, that's it. It's his career's over again. We've said that a million times. And yet, as it starts to get closer and he signed the restricted free agent tender, you get the sense that it's very much an open question. And that's something that I think I could learn in the summer leading into August that will absolutely change this Patriots team if he was brought back, whether they think it's going to be during the season or, you know, for week one or whatever. They would go from never having a big-time physical outside receiver, you know, almost throughout the Bill Belichick era, to suddenly having two, having no tight ends, and they've been a tight end heavy operation, to one of the worst tight end rosters in the NFL, but then having N'Keal Harry and Josh Gordon on opposite sides, it would just be a very different looking Patriots team. And I think, you know, his status is something that absolutely could be a factor in the AFC race in general.
We brought up Brian Baldinger a couple of minutes ago. I'd be curious to hear from a Baldy type, Josh Gordon's skills have eroded, if at all, in the last 5 years over the stops and starts of a career that's been dotted by substance abuse issues. Is he still a guy that you can get excited about as a guy that works on the outside and makes plays? I know he's had moments.
He was a top 15 receiver in terms of yards for the stretch, really, after he kind of picked up the playbook until he was gone. I thought he was a really solid. He isn't the same Josh Gordon, but he's an above average starter for sure.
I don't worry about the physical side, because even when he came back for, you know, very quick periods with the Browns, he was dominant. But it's the idea that he's had multiple, you know, periods where he's been away in Exodus for a year plus, 8-9 months. So here's another one of those periods. You get him back, he signed all this stuff, he starts to play. I feel like week to week he's a proposition.
Yeah.
I mean, what about it this time has changed? Because he's already put out that letter a couple times saying, I've comprehensively changed the person. At this point, we just all want that to be true of him, but why would the Patriots find him to be reliable when they seem to want reliable players more than any other trait on that roster?
They can't totally count on him, and I think that's maybe one reason they drafted N'Keal Harry, though I think they would have anyways, but he just changes the dynamic of that offense if he's there.
He's one of those guys, to Mark's point, like even if he played in the AFC Championship game, you couldn't count on him for the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
That's fair.
I'll go next. On the topic of wide receivers with troubles off the field, how will this Tyreek Hill situation get resolved? And is there any scenario where the Chiefs keep Hill? I know they told him to stay away from the team, but that's a lot different than cutting the cord. If they do, and he's on the roster in 2019, is there any scenario where Tyreek Hill plays? Is he going to be on the exempt list, commissioner exempt list regardless, or does he somehow, you know, dodge that? And, you know, the latest, of course, on Hill is that the criminal case against Hill and his fiance for alleged child abuse was reopened following the release of that audio on the first night of the draft. And Hill's representation issued a, quote, detailed denial to the NFL on the child abuse accusation. The tape, of course, was incredibly damning. So there's all that to play out, but I'm just curious, you know, how this gets resolved. The Chiefs drafted a wide receiver in the second round. It indicates that they are at least preparing for life after Tyreek Hill. But is that how this actually ends up? I think we all have our opinions, what we think about Tyreek Hill after all these things that have come out. But how do the Chiefs go about, what is the future of Hill? That's still very much up in the air.
That's a good question. We saw how his agent came out, was pretty aggressive in his denials and kind of obfuscation of what's really going on. And maybe if he didn't have this history, there'd be some benefit of the doubt, but I can't imagine that he gets any benefit of the doubt.
Well, it sounds like, I think just the takeaway from that is that the Tyreek Hill side is going to legally fight this. And Mike Garofalo reported last week, you know, they weren't expecting any NFL action to take place last week. I don't know if that, to me, that just seems like it, right now it's indefinite. But to answer your question, Dan, I think the answer almost has to be yes, there's a scenario, or else he wouldn't be on the roster. Like, if they, you know, if until they cut him, I will believe there's a scenario, because they have to be thinking there's a scenario that that's possible, or else they'd cut him.
That's why I said,
right?
Stay away. The wording, you know, the wording, you have to look at the wording in the statement that was released by Brett Veach on that Thursday night. He said, for the foreseeable future, he is not going to be connected to any Chiefs activities whatsoever. But there was no, we don't condone these allegations, you know, this behavior. We are cutting ties. They're leaving the door open. And it also got me thinking, Hill, again, when we talk about this, one of the best wide receivers in all of football. And so he's not just an important player. He's a vital player to an AFC contender. And I know people want to say, oh, that's not going to matter, but you wonder what's going on behind closed door at Kansas City. And if this is, if this goes to the point where Tyreek Hill's career is over at age 25, I'm trying to think if there's ever been anything. I know, you know, Ray Rice, but Ray Rice was coming near the end of the line. Greg Hardy is a guy that, of course, was a prime kind of sack master when his domestic violence issues, in effect, ended his career. This is kind of uncharted territory in the modern NFL, a guy of this star level disappearing. I wonder if it actually happens.
It's a good question. There's a guy named Lance Rensel who played for the Cowboys and Vikings in the late 60s and early 70s, and I would encourage people to Google his name. He had some very interesting off-the-field issues that pretty much ruined his career.
All right. Mark, close us up. Let's do it.
I know Wes will not like this.
Bringing you in for the save, Mark.
Well, I don't know if I can. I have not participated on the softball team and not played any version of baseball or softball in 2+ decades, so maybe a bad idea. I am focused on, I feel like Joe Flacco, I get it. We all, Wes loves him as soaring through the season. They drafted a tight end, and it's perfect for Joe Flacco, but a good tight end is perfect for any quarterback. So that is not exclusive to Joe Flacco. And the Broncos, who have, John Elway has largely botched the search for a quarterback almost entirely outside of Joe Flacco. So there's reason to think Flacco could just be positioned in and roll. But you took Drew Lock, and here's the issue I have with just simply sitting him all year. You, if Drew Lock is not the answer, you can also say that Joe Flacco is not the long-term answer. And you are coming into a draft in next year where people look at that as what this was not, that there are some... We'll see how it shakes out. But Justin Herbert, the screw-up for Tua guy. I mean, you could roll into next year's draft as the Broncos, finally as John Elway is having the dude if your team is not quite there. So do you have to find a way to, if Drew Lock thrives in the summer camps, in off-season, in the training camp, and into the preseason, does it put Joe Flacco again on a short shelf life if he is not anything but pristine? I don't know how you don't take a look at this guy with many more options at quarterback next year, because Drew Lock also is not seen as necessarily the next dude. So you're not going to just say we're comfortable with him for the next half decade and then be the John Elway that misses and totally whiffs on someone much better next April.
So Elway likes Flacco enough that there was no discussion of taking a quarterback in the first round. He wasn't going to take a quarterback at that spot. But he doesn't like him enough to bypass the opportunity to draft Drew Lock in the second round.
I think he did not like any of the quarterbacks in this draft enough. Yes, absolutely. And I think he said, listen, if for some reason Joe Flacco turned this team into position, we're not going to be able to draft a quarterback next year, take a swing on someone. Drew Lock was not anyone's number one dude, but there are some people that really like him, so there's a reason to take a shot. But I just think it's trying to figure out, it's almost like the Dolphins from a different angle, where your quarterback investment could be happening right now with what you did with Rosen, but it's very acceptable in Miami if Drew Rosen is not what they want, that they go out and draft someone else. I view Joe Flacco as someone that is a one-year solution, even from a money angle. They can get out from underneath that contract if anyone else pops up. And if John Elway is trying to tell Broncos fans, we are centering this team around a latter stages Joe Flacco for the ongoing future, he has his fans, and I get it. He's better than what they've had. That is a tough sell to me if I'm a Broncos fan.
He has the future in his own hands, and that's happened twice in his career. Once he won the Super Bowl, and once he lost his job to Lamar Jackson.
I think we're going to see Drew Lock this year, but that's a good. You bring up a good.
I'm
point,
just wondering
Mark.
How soon do you wait till week 15?
Well, the summer. You're right. The summer does matter for these young quarterbacks a lot. The summer is going to matter for Josh Rosen. It's going to matter for Drew Lock. Those are kind of the players to watch in August. Are the young guys?
But there's not a scenario where Drew Lock beats out Joe Flacco for the job week one. Do you think so?
I think any scenario is I am over trying to say that a young quarterback will not be put on the field. It would be surprising.
It would be shocking, but I don't think it's totally out of the realm.
Joe Flacco would have to get
hurt. It would be bad team building because of what they went and did with Joe Flacco. So from that angle, I'm with Wes that he's got that. But do I think that there'd be a big problem if the Broncos just laid a gigantic fart out of the gate and went 1-4? What is the patience with Joe Flacco at that point when you have a young quarterback to look at?
I don't think he can survive 1-4.
I think we all are in agreement on that, because if the Broncos are scuffling along and Flacco does not look like the guy Elway thought he was getting, you probably want to see the young kid in the short term try to save the season, and it also has the long term effect of getting a look at this guy with a big draft class coming up. What would be really tricky for the Broncos is if Flacco doesn't work out or gets hurt. Locke is okay. He flashes maybe like somewhere between Rosen and Darnold this past year, where he has some moments but also has some lowlights. Then what does Elway do if he has a high pick next April? But we got plenty of time to talk about
what could go wrong.
Do we want to do like a real quick one real quick? Just throw one out there and then say goodbye.
Speed round?
I'll throw a real quick one out there. I just want to keep an eye out on Cam Newton, parenthetical shoulder, Carson Wentz, parenthetical back. Both guys rehabbing. Newton is very confident. Wentz, the last time we heard, was still working his way back. Those guys are healthy in themselves. Those teams are division winners potentially and playoff teams. If not, especially in Philly, they don't have Nick Foles there anymore. Those teams are sunk.
I'll give you a quick one. We don't know who's on Hard Knocks. And we were just at lunch, and usually we know by now. That announcement often has been made.
It's in this zone.
And I would love to see it be – I look back last year, how much you can learn from Hard Knocks when it's done well. When we saw Hugh Jackson battling with his staff, and you just sensed something was – we already knew something was not right, but there were prime examples to look at. I would love to see the Raiders. I'd love to see Gruden and Mayock. There was – like Albert Breer put out a big thing from Mayock today, how he gets along better with Gruden than people ever would perceive, according to Mayock, and they lean on each other. I would like to see that. I thought you'd throw in a little Mark Davis spice and Antonio Brown. That, to me, is why I would watch Hard Knocks versus if they throw it to the Tennessee Titans or some other team that's going to make me take a long nap.
I do wonder if the Browns –
don't speak it into the air.
If the Browns were another reason for these teams to say, I don't want to do that. Look what happened with the Browns. Like that was sort of when all these, you know, coaches are very fearful of Hard Knocks. Like that's what they're afraid of, is what happened to you.
Wes?
We've got the last wave, or maybe last violent wretches of free agency coming up.
Right.
Later this week.
The death rattle of free agency.
The death rattle when you no longer have to pay via compensation picks for signing free agents. So teams are waiting for some of these guys who have a lot of snaps played over the last few years but are not seen as difference makers. So some guys are about to be signed. And specifically, what does that tell us about the Miami Dolphins? A team that nobody's sure if they're organically tanking or not, but some of the positions on their roster, say offensive line, they don't even have starters. They don't even have backups. Like who's going to – are they really tanking, or are they going to go get some of these –
they're supposedly interested in Nick Perry, which would be...
Stick to the plan, boys.
I think they would. There's some decent players. I mean, there were two guys in the top 15 of our free agents still out there, Ndamukong Suh and Ziggy Ansah.
Mm. Greg, close it out.
I just doubling on your Cam Newton point. To me, that's the number one story, because coming off of a shoulder surgery, like he wants to play it a little more cautiously this time instead of rushing back like he did last time, which did not work too well. So I don't know. I never believe the sunny early prognoses of these recoveries from shoulder surgery. And for Newton, it did turn out to bite.
And it was reported after it was more minor than they anticipated. Well, we'll see.
Right.
No shoulder surgery is minor. Am I right, Mark?
Dead on. Very correct.
All right.
I mean, I got a tetanus shot and that wasn't even minor.
When?
I mean, it was, but not to you.
It's like a dull pain for a couple days.
Pretty minor.
Well, they warn about minor.
Yeah,
they warn about the dull pain.
I'm joking.
Wait, did you really get a tetanus shot?
Yeah, recently.
For what?
They were like, you haven't had a doctor's appointment in 15 years. We recommend it every 10 years. So
I thought you only need that if you step on a rusty nail.
Want the booster?
So you got the works.
You said it. I said, hey, it's up to you. What do you think? You know, hey,
give me the works.
Knock out. I don't know. Haven't had tetanus yet.
I smell a raccoon attack that you're hiding from us.
That no, I was out. Just there.
And hidden musical tapes, raccoon issues.
All right, we'll be back Wednesday. It's a three-show week. The Around the NFL podcast keeps rolling. That's it from here. Let's go. Stan Hansen signing off. For Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Wednesday. I feel like it actually would fit in well with working class Cincinnati.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I was a mailman, all we did was go out dancing and hanging out in mosh pits and throwing people around.
You slam danced?
Oh, I did, yeah.